In today's episode of the Foden Bede Show, we'll speak with In Rob We Trust about his fleet, his opponents, TTS, and the Onager, and then follow up with some news about the first round of the Swiss. Welcome to the Foden Bede Show, a weekly podcast about the Star Wars Armada Vassal World Cup. Hello and welcome. I'm Rythos42, and with me today is my co-host, Armchair Jedi.
Hello there.
Joining us today is In Rob We Trust. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
I'm super glad to have you on the episode. You mentioned you had a bunch of topics you wanted to talk about, and I love interview guests that come with their own topics. Let's start with one of my basic questions for people. How long have you been playing Armada?
Well, let's see. I was playing maybe just around the Chimera and Profundity expansion, but I remember waiting for the Super Star Destroyer, and that being the big news. I'd say about 2018 or 2019.
Have you played in the previous VWC event?
No, I'm primarily a tabletop simulator and IRL player. I'd heard a lot about VWC through the unnamed Star Wars Armada podcast, and thought now that I'm experienced, I really ought to join this year.
What brought you to the event this year?
I think I really wanted to compete at a high level. I had competed in the Team International Tournament and a couple of others on TTS, and I think that there's a really large international community. You get to meet some really interesting people, and there's not a lot of crossover, so I wanted to see what the other community was like.
It's really interesting about not a lot of crossover. I don't know that, because obviously I only play Vassal, but the Canadian Discord is entirely TTS, and that felt a little bit strange as a thing that I'm not involved in this thing, and yet my countrymen are doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of the same here. The creator and a number of admins of the TTS Discord are from Texas, I'm from, and so it's kind of funny. People just kind of gravitate towards one thing, but I don't think there's any one that's better than the other, and we'll get into that later.
Tell us a little bit about the fleet that you brought to the VWC pod phase.
It started when the Onager came out. I decided to bring one to my local tournament, and Jay Palmany brought a double Onager, and it blew everybody completely out of the water. I said, I gotta start doing that. And I liked playing that for a while, but I also wanted to play around with Salvo. I think it's a fun mechanic, like a lot of other people have gotten in on. And I wanted to do something that used a little bit of a wider array of skill set, something with more objective play than a double Onager. So I knew I wanted to have an Interdictor. At first, it involved putting the Onager in front and using projection experts, and what happened very quickly was people would single out the Interdictor. So I have a fully loaded Onager, and the Interdictor I put on Minister Tua and Reactive Gunnery. So that way, you don't really want to shoot at an Interdictor, it's going to engineer a lot, and instead of throwing 4 dice at you, now it's throwing 7, and with the experimental retrofits, I can turn around to most objectives to be in my favor. The setup obstruction with General Ramodi. After that, I have 2 Gozantes for activation padding and passing around tokens. And then I had a bunch of different ideas for the squad ball. Things like Tel Tavura or Captain Jonas to help with accuracies or slowing down enemies. But in the end, I just wanted something real well-rounded to, you know, because I didn't know what I was going to face. So I ended up with Sienna Valen and Merrick Gendon. So just the greatest hits the Empire.
Did you go through any iteration with this while you were building it?
I like to play around with the projection experts. I think there's a diverging path between like the double Onager fleet that I would play and this really wacky tag projection experts like 7th fleet thing that I tried to make. And so I wanted things like kind of support each other, but also be able to use those new mechanics like Salvo.
When you got into the pods, how did you initially feel about the pod opponents that you got matched up against?
Oh man, I thought I was in for an easy time. I had gotten used to fighting Sloan, and so, you know, I wasn't too concerned about that fleet because I could punch at them from far away. I knew that the double recusant list that I would have to fight against, well, neither one of them are Patriot Fist, and I'd flown recusants before, so I know just how fragile they are. And most interestingly, JJ's list is a large and multiple smalls kind of archetype, where the small ships generally like fly support or screen for the very like large Patriot Fist. But I was like, thought to myself, well, I could probably knock out that Patriot Fist in one or two hits from extreme range and everything will be great. And I looked at his profile. It had a flare called World Champion. And yeah. My heart kind of sunk. So each of the fleets in my pod had some very strong strengths, whether it was being outnumbered by Lem squadrons or just the complete overwhelming firepower that the two of Horngrim's recusants brought. After I sat down, you know, I was like, oh, this is actually really going to be a challenge. We'll start with the first match I played against Horngrim. Like I initially said, I had tried to fly recusants myself. You know, they're deceptively strong with the number of shields and the decent amount of hull. But compared to other larges, you know, it's less hull and less shields. And without double defense tokens, it can be pretty dicey. So I had the idea that if I could isolate one of the recusants and get a parting shot on one of the hard cells, then I would be in a pretty good spot to make away with it. You know, the Onager has excellent capability for shooting and then scooting. So that one worked out decently well. With his only two squadrons in his fighter screen and Merrick having grit, I was able to kind of bounce around and make do with certain things. My interdictor got into the thick of it. It was, you know, dueling with hard cells and then salvoing back, which actually worked out really well in my favor. You know, we each have three or four dice that we're throwing at each other, but then, you know, the salvo comes in and things start tipping in my favor. I ended up picking his volatile deposits, and I hadn't practiced that objective before, but my ability to move the obstacles allowed me to capture more points off of the objective than he did. Everything was going really well until the fifth round. Unfortunately, some problems developed at the very beginning. He had basically taken one of the recusants and put it at one end, and took the other recusant and put it at the other end. So I had to decide which one to go for. And the one that I went for, my veteran gunners turned against me, and my first shot dealt four blanks and an accuracy. And after that, it was just a catch-up game. You know, he survives with one health and then engineers the next turn, and so on. So my Onager was at the very edge of the board. And the very last thing that his recusant did was use, what are they called, the B2 troopers, to place a nav raid on my Onager as it's careening towards the edge of the board. You know, it's my last shot. And I thought, oh, well, this is, something really interesting happened because the final crit that he gave me, what is the name of it? The one where you have to discard your dial or suffer one damage. And so that's kind of an interesting thing because you can't discard the dial to get rid of the raid token and to get rid of the suffering damage from the crit effect. So I threw away a perfectly good nav dial and continued to move towards the edge of the board. And on the next turn, we were revealed, and I forgot that I'd put a con fire because I thought, oh, I'll get that one last shot to close out the game. So that was very unfortunate and pretty embarrassing way to end my first game, flying off the board to table myself. And then the sleepless nights, like, if I had just taken the token and suffered the damage, and then on turn six, I could have thrown away the dial then to resolve the token. But Horngrim was a good sport about it. So I lost my first game 3-8. I mean, he played very well. He had some very strong objectives and forced me to take the volatile deposits, and that's just how things worked out. I didn't beat myself up too much about it. Looking at Lem's fleet, it is very intimidating from that squadron perspective, and he does have the Quasar and the ISD to push them, but I feel like, you know, with all the rules changes and stuff, like a Sloan two-ship archetype just isn't as strong as it used to be, and that fleet doesn't have the amount of hull points to stand up to my firepower. He does have boosted comms, which gives it quite a lot of reach, if I remember correctly, but it really struck me as odd that he took Merrick without Jendon. So that one, I believe we took my salvage run, which is really nasty because all of the obstacles have to be clumped near the middle. I get to basically place them perfectly, and Sloan squadrons, you know, as good as they are, they only have one dice for bombing. So I threw my squadrons at his, and by the time that all of my squadrons had died, my ships were on stations and asteroid fields and such, so that they wouldn't be able to be bombed on the turn when his ISD would shoot it. That would just be the worst, to have my interdictor take a full 8-dice shot without a brace. That one worked out kind of well. You know, I was able to take out the Quasar early, and then use the interdictor to block the ISD, and I collected all my tokens, so that one ended up being in my favor. Horngrim's got 18, I've got 13, and then How much can you beat a world champion on your first time? You know, what's the likelihood of that happening? So it was time for some clandestine operations as I took Lem's fleet in real life and stood all of my local gamers around the table, and we discussed theory and tactics and turning around and running away for as a way for Lem to play Kingmaker in my favor. And so we took it to a practice game, and he was kind of between me and Lem, and he was adamant about fighting, and I said, okay. And then, well, wouldn't you know it, he gets a 10-1 against me in the practice game. And I'm, like, sweating, like, oh, God, like, what did I do wrong? Like, is this really going to work? Is this possible that it's going to work out for me? I think it's a fun idea, this round-robin concept. In a lot of ways, it's like that feeling where top table is fighting, and you're looking at the second table, and it's like, oh, if they get a 10-1, then the two people at the top table get put under. You know, it's a very unique feeling that in a Swiss. But I have to wonder if anyone else was in the same position as I am, where you're essentially relying on a completely different battle to take place that would affect your standings. So in the end, the possibility of the three-way tie only existed if I got a 7-4 victory against JJ. And we both knew that going into it. We had a group chat for a pod, and things were calculated to a 164 margin of victory. And here's the thing. This isn't a situation where JJ could do whatever he likes. There is a real possibility that he gets eliminated. If I go first against his fleet, then regardless of what objectives that he has, the Rekizen is going to take quite a bit of damage, and it's going to, you know, die without getting a shot in. And I knew that one of his objectives was Doomed Station, where, once again, the objects have to be placed generally near the middle, and I could flip that into my favor. And so that was a very clear option. And one of my training partners, Louis André, kind of pointed out to me that there's a very strong possibility that JJ deploys sideways, and all he has to do is not lose. So it's, in a way, better if I play second and he chooses my salvage run. I'll get the 80 points, but because there's a chance of various ships, you know, escaping the Onager arc, or, you know, the various advantages that his fleet has going first, he'll be more likely to engage. Because the only way that I can beat him reasonably is to engage. In our practice run, I had tried fighting by targeting the ship that definitely could not escape even going second. That is the Sanalor. But Sanalor gives essentially a free evade that does not exhaust. Plus, you have Tykes giving repair tokens, and it's almost like that little Munificent has more engineering power than a Super Star Destroyer. It was very tough.
What ended up happening in that game after all of the practice and the theory crafting, and where did you end up?
Something that, like, a very skilled player can do is put their opponent in an unpredictable situation. In all of my games, I, generally speaking, deploy the proximity mines that I have on one side and the gravity well on the other side. And if they deploy in the middle, they'll still be in Onager range. And it's something like where usually people pick the middle or the mines side. So in this situation, as with me going second, he had one more deployment over me. I spread out my fleet because I don't want my own deployments to block the possible first shot of my Onager. If I place my Interdictor and my Gozantes too close together, he could place his Rekizant directly across from them, thus preventing me from getting the mid or getting the arc and him getting away. I place my Interdictor very far on the mine side because I think that's where he's going to go, and I want to be able to use the Interdictor as a blocker and have it live. I can't afford to lose the Interdictor or the Onager and still advance. So JJ places down his Rekizant, speed zero, inside of the Gravwell, on the opposite side of the board. At this point, I can place down my Onager to where I'll get the first shot, but the battle is already lost. My Interdictor at speed two is way beyond distance five of my Onager. It won't be able to block or deal extra damage for it, and it's probably not even going to get to the battle in time. The very thing that I want to do to my enemies, isolate their fleet and pick off the juiciest part, he had already done to me. Usually, can get the Inhrichter to block for certain things, or even the Gazantes were kind of out of place. If you'd imagine the two Gazantes up at the front of the distance three line, about distance four or five from each other, my Onagers nestled diagonally behind one of them, pointing at his recusant, and the Interdictor is even distance three from the farthest Gozanti. So after that deployment, I was kicking myself. How could I let myself lose control and spread out so widely? But, you know, that was just the fake out that he did in deployment. It was really interesting.
It's a crazy move, like dropping on purpose, you know, your big expensive ship and saying, okay, come get me.
Right.
You know, that's a big move.
You know, the possibility that it might be obstructed and then you've got six red. Well, I think a lot of people always avoid the Gravwell. And I think kind of the secret to my fleet is you shouldn't. A recusant could take one good hit, even at speed zero. And since I was going second, it's absolutely not going to be speed zero. It's so much of a deterrent that if you deploy in the Gravwell, you're not going to see any of the proximity mine tokens. The proximity mine tokens are placed on obstacles so they could be pushed toward you. So you're not going to see any obstacles either. And the rest of your fleet is still free to act. So I think that was a really insightful move on his part.
Moving on to the next bit, you didn't make it out of the pod phase.
Right.
Similar to Armchair and myself. Did you join the second chance event?
There was a little bit where I thought, oh, I've taken this pod phase far too seriously, and you know, oh, I have nothing to show for it. But I ended up joining the second chance tournament. So yeah, I'm looking forward to flying more casual games with this fleet where I don't do any practice.
Did you bring the same fleet or a different one to the second chance event?
I brought the exact one. I didn't see any changes that really need to be made. Just changes to the way I deploy and fly.
You wanted to talk about differences between TTS and Vassal, and as somebody who's played, you know, a notable amount of games with both at this point, what do you think about the two systems?
The things that are good about both, I really like the three-dimensional view in Tabletop Simulator because it more emulates real life. Whichever side of the board that you're standing on, your fleet will always be from your perspective. I think it's a part of the way that Vassal is designed in two dimensions that you either be having to fight bottom up or top down. And that perspective can be a little bit difficult when lining up shots. On the plus side for Vassal, I think it has excellent key bindings, excellent logging, some very good distance measuring because they use color bands, whereas TTS uses three-dimensional lines. As for TTS, I think moving ships in TTS is much better because the maneuver tool stays locked in, and you can manipulate it really easily, add or subtract from the length of it, and moving squadrons in TTS is better because if you move your mouse as far as it can go, your squadron will only go as far as the range bands are. Whereas in Vassal, it's a lot more free form, it's less restricting, but that makes it difficult to do certain precision things. And having to go through the trouble of cloning a squadron, pulling up the distance bands, moving it, and deleting the old squadron, it goes a little bit faster in TTS, which is, I think, the thing that takes up the most time in a game of Armada. And the final point in TTS's favor is I just really like the sound of rolling dice. Whether you prefer the spaceship noises or the rolling dice noises is a personal preference, but it's a very strong one for me.
I've got both of them. I've bought TTS off of a Steam sale, I don't know how long ago now, and it's like, oh yeah, no, I want to try it out, and I never kind of get around to it. But you know, there's enough people around me now talking it up. Like a lot of things you say about how it's more true to the tabletop in a lot of ways. I know when I play a lot of Vassal, especially these days, and I go to the table, I'm like, I don't know how to play this game anymore because nothing looks right. You know, it's not the top-down view anymore, and I've got these angles and stuff, and it's all weird. So it makes me an even worse player.
Well, it's funny how that is. Certain fleet archetypes might be good only online.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your name.
There's a story here.
You said there was a story about your name.
Yes. So my real name is Rob. Okay, that's pretty normal. Kind of got my start in Call of Duty Modern Warfare lobbies. And I wanted to be someone who was really respectable, who could run a gaming clan. And there's a lot of studies done on usernames. If your name is like Rob98 or something like that, it's like a sign that you're immature. You're like a little kid that was born in 1998. So it's kind of a portmanteau of the dollar bill, the US dollar bill. It says, "In God we trust," at the top. And I thought that would be just a nice little pun. And people would see me as an authoritative, trustable figure.
How did that work out for you?
It worked out pretty well. And I think so many times online where people can't see each other's faces, they're very like aggro. But if you are nice to them, then it changes their opinion and you can have a good experience.
One last thing. You said you wanted to talk about the Onager for a moment.
I just want to throw my hat in the ring. Everyone has their idea on what could make the Onager, you know, a better play experience or more balanced. A lot of people want to change the arcs or do different things like that. I think that if the Onager is not the Empire's best option, then you'll see it a lot less. I think that the testbed needs at minimum a 20-point increase, and I think that the salvo token needs to work at long, medium, and short range. I think if we do just a very simple change like that, you'll see it come in line with the other ships.
Well, I hope that when AMG gets around to giving us their love, that they give us good love, not bad love, and that the Onager gets tweaked and not destroyed.
Absolutely. It's a really interesting, unique part of the game, and I hope we can find a way to make it work for everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, with that, thanks very much. In Rob, we trust. It's been great hearing about your fleet and your opponents. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast tonight.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And now let's move on to last week's news. Armchair?
Thanks, Rythos. So in this past week of the Swiss, on the top table, Boba Fett versus Deridian. Deridian's Jerry Bombers and its VSD found more than they could handle in Boba Fett's Sonager list and lost heavily 10-1-400.
Ouch.
Yes. I'm still pulling for that VSD. On the second seed table, in Rob We Trust's podmate, JJ's Juggernaut got past Protomaker with another 10-1-395. Not sure what objective they played, but evidently Protomaker didn't manage another Doomed Station victory. On the three seed game, Forminder versus Rold, and a thanks to both Forminder and Rold for taking the time to fill us in the details of their match. I kind of reached out to them almost last minute to find out what happened, and they both spent, I mean, I don't know how much time they spent, but they both gave me very, very detailed battle reports with screenshots and analysis and things. And I thought, wow, this is cool. I should just read this and not do any of my own work. In the match, though, Rold's tag fleet upset the number three seed Forminder with an 8-3-197 victory. Both of them felt that the match could have gone either way. Despite going first through the pod phase, Rold felt it better to take second this time given the deployment disadvantage. Rold mentioned that his initial plan was pretty much what we talked about last week, making this one of the premier strategy podcasts on the internet.
Well, go us.
Right?
I mean, go you.
Go. Well, no, go us. I think we need to hire the BIG's disclaimer person to give us a disclaimer.
Yeah.
But despite the awesomeness of that initial plan, slicing the carriers and then going for the Venator, the deployment disparity made him change his plans. And the game kind of progressed kind of chess-like fashion till about turn three. And in turn three, Forminder had the choice for his first activation. He could have activated his Consular with Clone Captain Zach and blasted Rold's Demolisher. With a combination of Zach and X-Rax, and then try to chase down the Gazanti with the capture the VIP token, or activate his Venator and try to save his Pelta, which only had one hole left. Forminder chose the Venator and killed Corvus and hammered Demo in the Arctans, but this allowed Demo to kill Zach's Corvette and then pound the Venator, which in turn succumbed to the combined fire of Rold's Arctans. In hindsight, they both pinpoint this as the turning point, which allowed Rold to eventually table Forminder. But it was one of those moments where you do your best, you know, in the game, in the moment with what you're seeing. And then inevitably afterwards, you talk about it and you go, yeah, you know, if I'd done this bit differently or that differently, but it's hard to make those pivotal decisions in the heat of the moment. Neither of them thought tag played a pivotal role in the game, but Rold likes how it makes some of his decisions easier. For example, you don't have to think so hard about double spending that evade or blowing your brace to save one or two damage when you know it's going to come back next turn. And he finds that while tag doesn't necessarily give him back more than a handful of hull points every match, it's just that sort of reassuring cushion that makes it fun to play. I know I also have a soft spot for Lost Causes, so I think, Rythos, you might see some tag fleets coming at you in the near future.
Oh, exciting.
On the Seed 4 table, Rimson got a narrow 6-5, 32 MOV victory over Mechanic. And again, thanks to both Rimson and Mechanic for giving us some details of their match. Both players called out Mechanic's point defense ion cannons as playing a significant role in the outcome. Rimson's squads were all over Mechanic's fleet, but the PDIC prevented most of the damage from sticking. Rimson's choice to slow down and turn into Mechanic's fleet in order to keep his double arcs on target may have been his undoing, as he ended up flying his Venator into the Providence. Mechanic might have saved a Munificent if he'd attacked the Venator's side rather than the front and got a good damage roll, but it wasn't to be. Rimson is one of two Bale players in the Swiss. Rimson tells me that rather than being a difficult commander to use, Bale has really helped his Venator pull more weight by letting him dial up more offensive dials while Bale hops in and helps out with navs and repairs. And I'd like to just call out the fact that both players gave each other huge props for sportsmanship and play in their communication with me without really knowing that I was talking to the other one. So kudos on both of you for just being good people there.
BIG put out a blog article about being the kind of community you want to see, and that's a huge part of it.
Absolutely. On the 5-seed table in the Battle of the Acronyms, MHD got past B2W with an 8-3-145. Down on the 10v31 table, friend of the podcast Docta versus friend of the podcast Maturin had another very close match. Maturin came out ahead with 6-5, but only 51 MOV. And again, thanks to Docta and Maturin for giving us some of the insight into their match. Docta stuck to his guns for this one and chose to go second. Morala was set to start his shenanigans, but Docta got him engaged just a little too early. Maturin's Deltas took down Morala and then rolled up Docta's squad ball. On the last turn of the game, Maturin managed to take down Demolisher, but in the very last activation, Docta's Onager sniped Mercy Mission. That last kill changed the game from an 8-3 win down to a slim 6-5.
Who was winning prior to that? It was
Maturin. So that last turn snipe of Mercy Mission, because remember, Mercy Mission gives you bonus points if you kill it. That made Docta's loss much more competitive. Down on table 12v29, Sam's dual interdictor Onager fleet got a 7-4, 89 MOV win over Dark Raver's Nita SSD. And cool to see the SSD hang in there against such a dangerous list and a dangerous player in Sam. One level down, 13 seed cylindrical Bobcat, my pod screed pod mate, defeated Dreadlord Loki with a 9-2, 280 MOV. Friend of the podcast Fox Omega beat Taserface using his Dooku fleet with a 7-4, 62 MOV. That was on the 15 versus 26 matchup. And Vassal Armada, what is his official title? Messiah? Guru? Deity? Green Knight lost a fairly close match to last year's runner-up Angry Ewok with a 7-4, 115 MOV.
So that's the end of the reporting on last week's news. What have you got for us for round two of the pods?
Well, coming up in round two this week, we've got obviously a bunch more games. The matchups now move into a normal Swiss pairing rather than the first v last bracketing for the first round. Robofet maintains his top seed. Paul's big win over Spike vaults him from 23rd up into second. And JJ's 10-1 with only a 3-5-9 MOV drops him down to third. My podmate, Cylindrical Bobcat, moves up from 13th to 4th.
That's it for tonight. Thanks again to In Rob We Trust for joining us. I'm Rythos42.
And I'm Armchair Jedi.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
Thanks for listening to the Foden Beat Show. We don't have a Patreon or Apple reviews for you to give us, but if you have a story you'd like to tell us or feedback on the podcast, write us at fodenbeatarmada@gmail.com or on Discord. Listen to us next week for more Vassal World Cup commentary.